Thank you very much, and can I thank start by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we stand. Can I thank CEDA for organising this day? It's a great opportunity to be here, and it's a great opportunity to have to share the podium with these fine people, and to be able to participate in what I hope will be a good debate about what has actually happened with work choices over the last year. If a week is a long time in politics, then the year 2006-07 has been an eternity in industrial relations. We've had high court battles. We've had complete rewrites of the industrial legislation that many of the people in this room will have worked with and have become familiar with over many years. We are in a brand new place. It's a great opportunity to be here also, having just come straight from the Public Accounts and Estimates Committee of the Victorian Parliament, where my minister has been through a number of questions, and not surprisingly, a number of them related to the work choices area. Just over 12 months ago, the federal government unveiled sweeping changes to the way we regulate our working lives. Work choices was a controversial, high-risk policy then, and it is certainly still front and centre now. It lingers as the big barbecue stopper, but the backyard gossip is probably not going the way the Prime Minister John Howard would like it at the moment. Why? Well, fingers have been pointed at the ACTU's campaign, and I'm sure Richard might have something to say about that, and criticism of the work choices policy by state governments, like the one I work for, and their agencies. But the strength of the community's reaction, I must say, reflected by recent opinion polling from all the major social research companies, the thousands of complaints that are being received by state employment advocates, like the one we established, the Workplace Rights Advocate in Victoria, must indicate a deep underlying concern about the policy. Given the level of media interest and the durability of industrial relations as a key issue, work choices seem certain to be an influential factor in the upcoming federal election, and no doubt why CEDA have attracted so many people to this fine function today. That's surely behind the Howard government's extraordinary move recently to bury work choices as a brand name after spending more than $50 million on promoting that policy. As a public servant, I must say I feel for colleagues in Canberra at the moment who will be grappling to come to terms with implementing the rapid recent changes that are occurring in the federal industrial law. Opponents of work choices, including the Victorian government, they see it as a tricky way of tilting the balance of power away from working Australians and of cutting their pay and conditions. To be clear, my boss, my minister, Rob Hulls, feels so strongly about work choices that he has labelled the policy, in his typically flamboyant fashion, as a dead skunk. Up until recently, the Prime Minister John Howard has steadfastly proclaimed work choices to be a constructive response to boosting productivity and employment. But the Prime Minister has been forced to concede that his radical changes may have gone too far in the minds of many working families. Earlier this month, Mr Howard, in what the national media described as a massive backflip, tacitly admitted that parts of work choices were inherently unfair. On the front page of the Age newspaper last week, the Workplace Relations Minister Joe Hockey conceded what the Victorian government has been telling the federal government for more than a year, that work choices is unfair and that the policy has allowed penalty rates and other protected award conditions to be traded away without adequate compensation. And this is a matter that my minister has been consistently pursuing with the federal government. Now, in terms of the recent changes, the introduction of the fairness test, that has been a deliberate move, clearly, by the federal government to ameliorate the policy. There's a couple of things I wanted to say about the fairness test, and it's certainly, I don't know if that's quite the barbecue stopper in its own right, but it's certainly gaining a fair amount of attention. The key things that that the Victorian government has pointed out about the fairness test are these, that it will have no bearing on 350,000 people described as the lost tribe who signed AWAs before May the 7th. That's a fact. After the May the 7th, though, the fairness test will apply The big question, and I'm sure something that my colleagues here will debate also today, is what effect is it actually going to have? My minister is deeply suspicious of the sudden change of heart at a time when the federal government is feeling the pressure electorally. Mr. Holles has looked at the test, the fairness test. He believes it's dodgy, and he has called it the Clayton's test, the test you're having when you're not having a test. As I said before, I do genuinely feel for colleagues in Canberra who are trying to implement this most recent change to the industrial legislation. As the state's senior advisor to the Industrial Relations Minister, I obviously have a role in helping to frame legislation applying in the state's jurisdiction to do with industrial relations. When one is framing legislation, one is looking for certainty, one looks for transparency and clarity in its operation. I'd have to say that we are not seeing that in the drafting of this particular piece of legislation, which we've only seen for a very short period of time. For a start, there is no definition of fair compensation in the bill against which the test can be administered. As Andrew Stewart, as recently quoted in Workplace Express, has said, and I quote, the possibility of fair compensation being found even in the absence of compensation of a monetary value is still preserved in the legislation. Stewart also queries whether long service leave as an extra over the legislated minimum, as an example, which the employee might already have, but which is not protected, might also be considered to be fair compensation. A further query I would raise is this, in terms of the fairness test. The provision that allows the director of the workplace authority to consider personal circumstances and family responsibilities is of great interest. How will that provision work? It will be interesting to see. For example, if I have family responsibilities, does that mean that I'll receive less monetary compensation than someone who doesn't? I'll be very interested to see, if we can, how that is actually applied. The Workplace Authority, and I'll be interested to hear the views of my colleagues on this, clearly has an incredible amount of power to determine how this particular test will be applied. Again, I feel for the colleagues in Canberra. Someone, like the people who work for me, will be having to write the fairness test handbook. It won't be a matter of handing out the legislation to those who are applying the test. There will have to be a guide. Good luck in writing it. We're certainly available to help on that one. Now, I digress briefly, though, in terms of the fairness test. What has happened in the last year? And, Chair, I think I've got 3 minutes to talk about that. To get to the heart of the matter, Industrial Relations Victoria commissioned Griffith University to compile a comprehensive 100-page report called The Impact of Work Choices 1 Year On. Perhaps this conference was built around that report. The report evaluates the impact of work choices on Victoria. It assesses the effect of AWAs, but the analysis has been hampered because critical data, in particular the content of AWAs, has been withheld. The report gauges how women have fared and the status of the gender gap. It outlines the impact of the removal of unfair dismissal protection for employers of less than 101 employees, the effect on the economy and productivity, and it studies the outcome of work choices on industrial disputes. Overall, the report that was launched by the Minister Holles contends that work choices is not the stimulus for national economic growth that its proponents claim, and it is certainly not the recipe for cooperative workplaces. It portrays work choices as a complex and confusing piece of legislation amounting to more than 2,500 pages of law. Importantly, the report shows the rate at which conditions are being removed is substantially higher under work choices AWAs than under pre-work choices AWAs. I'll give you one case, the case of Simon Tobin, a 17-year-old student who worked at a surf shop chain in Richmond. She was offered an AWA which cut her weekend and holiday penalty rates from about $14 and $20 an hour respectively, back to the base rate of $9.58 an hour without any compensation. We had the case of the workers at a Melbourne call centre operated for Lufthansa. They were told to sign AWAs which cut their base pay by between 3% and 10%, and it reduced their penalty rates and loadings. The rate at which overtime pay has been cut via AWAs has doubled from a quarter of AWAs in 2002-03 to over half of AWAs in 2006. In May last year, the Federal Employment Advocate Peter McIlwain told a Senate estimates hearing that all AWAs sampled in the first month of work choices removed at least one protected award condition. Since that time, Peter has, according to his evidence to the Senate Estimates Committee, been unable to release any further AWA data because of methodological problems. My minister has, and I've got 2 minutes, my minister has consistently been seeking the federal government to make that information available in order that a reasonable assessment can be made as to what the actual evidence is of the impact of AWAs. At the moment, all we can assume is what was occurring at the beginning of their implementation has continued. As you would all know, the Victorian government supports a national system of workplace regulation, but it's one based on fairness. The Victorian government was the first to urge Canberra to consult with the states before it introduced work choices. The Victorian government stuck its neck out. It resisted calls from vested interests to reinstitute a state-based industrial relations system. It pleaded with the federal government to negotiate on what would actually be the terms of a genuine national system to which Victoria, as is the only state, genuinely committed to. So 1 year on, Victorian government still does not support work choices as it's been amended because it continues to fail to meet the Victorian government's benchmark of fairness. It does not provide for rights to collective bargaining, genuine unfair dismissal protection, work and family standards, and it is not underpinned in the Victorian government's view by a comprehensive safety net. From the Victorian government's perspective and from my point of view as its chief industrial advisor, this last year of work choices and particularly its implementation has been a case study of how something as fundamental as changing so radically national workplace policy change should not be managed. Thanks very much.